Welcome back to the Bengals Beat Podcast. I'm Kelsey Conway here with my co-host Charlie Goldsmith. And Charlie, how are you doing today?
I'm two cups of coffee in, which is the perfect way to start the first day with a 53-man roster. So things are going well. How about yourself?
I'm about one and a half, and I need the rest of this because this 53-man roster, as we both know, was a lot. But the good thing is we have a lot to talk about today because of those decisions that were made. So let's just get into it. The Bengals announced their 53-man roster yesterday. All NFL teams had until 4 p.m. to get down to the league roster limit of 53. And the Bengals, there were some surprising players that were kept, and then there were some surprising players that they moved on from. So just from the start, what's your initial reaction when, if someone on the street said, what do you think about the Bengals roster?
What I think about the Bengals roster is that it has been a complete turnover over the last two seasons, specifically since Zach Taylor got to Cincinnati. But honestly, even since the start of the 2020 season, when Zach Taylor coached his first preseason game, it looked like the starting five on the offensive line with Jonah Williams out would include guys like Cordy Glenn and Billy Price and Michael Jordan. None of those five who were set to start the first game of the 2019 season are still with the team. It's a much younger team. They have had a lot of turnover. Has that change led to a more promising roster? Of course, that'll be the question answered over the course of the season, but they've made big bets on the guys they brought in, specifically, as we saw yesterday, more longer tenured players on the way out.
Yeah, but at the same time, they're longer tenured, but they're still kind of young in age. And it kind of piggyback off what you were saying. I included it in the story that I wrote yesterday on Cincinnati Inquirer about the 53-man rosters. But there's only 13 players who were on the Bengals roster now that were there when Zach Taylor inherited this roster. So you were talking about kind of just the turnover. And I thought it was really interesting. It mirrored the quote that you had in your story that you wrote from Mike Brown's State of the Franchise press conference that he does before training camp. It's Zach's team now. This is his team. These are his decisions. And he's got what he thinks is the best chance to help him win this year. So there's no denying that he has the players that he has, obviously, with Duke Tobin, hand-selected. And it's clear, as you said, that they're betting on some of these veterans to come in and kind of fill the gaps. And that was obvious with their decisions on the offensive line, right? You just talked about Michael Jordan not being there and Billy Price moving on from him. They're betting on guys like Xavier Suofilo and Quentin Spain and bringing in Riley Reiff. Like, they've clearly made it a mission this offseason to say we want to get older and we want to get more experience on the offensive line. I think when I looked at the initial roster, the first question I had, because I broke it down by numbers, if one of the Bengals' star defensive ends, or a Larry Ogunjobi, who's, you know, a defensive tackle, but they're still kind of hoping he's able to provide a little bit of a pass rush. My biggest question mark with this team is the depth on the defensive line, because from a sheer numbers perspective, they don't have a lot. I mean, Joseph Osai, that loss is huge for the fact that obviously he's, you know, looked to be really good. But outside of Sam Hubbard, Trey Hendrickson, and they're saying, you know, Darius Hodge, they're pleased with him. If one of those guys gets hurt, I don't know. And I think that was such an important thing that they needed to get better at after last year finishing 32 in sacks. I don't know. I do have some questions about the defensive line depth.
I'm just not sure it's a very deep team. Looking at the big takeaways from the preseason, some of the Bengals' good depth pieces. I think the Bengals are deep with their fourth wide receiver in Auden Tate. And I think they're deep when fully healthy at cornerback with Eli Apple as their fourth corner. But aside from those two guys, I'm not sure the Bengals bench is notably different than it was last season. The biggest takeaway from this week for me was kind of looking back at the Bengals draft misses over the last four or five seasons. Now the Bengals top three picks in their 2019 draft, a draft that Zach Taylor was a part of, are the only members of the entire draft class still on the roster. The Bengals lost their 2018 first round pick in Billy Price. And aside from an Auden Tate and a Darius Phillips, haven't gotten a ton out of that draft class. I also forgot Jesse Bates, obviously. Mm-hmm. But in terms of depth of their draft classes and in terms of what they've been able to do in the first round specifically, there are so many misses that the Bengals have had in 14, in 15, in 16, 17, 18. There are so few players then who have gotten to their second contract. The takeaway from that has been having to invest in veteran free agents to fill out your entire team. And in a number of cases, veteran free agents are veteran free agents for a little bit of a reason. And while say a DJ Reader or a Trey Waynes could end up providing a big impact like you would hope from a first round pick, the Bengals are now paying a premium price for premium free agents at starts where they hoped starters and draft picks could have emerged as starters, and at positions like center and offensive guard and cornerback. The Bengals have missed and haven't been able to find starters from the guys they've brought in, and the result is now a not very deep team because of their inability to really find success in the draft.
Well, that's a really good point, because in order to be a deep team, you really have to draft well, because the Bengals found themselves in a position where there were so many holes. It's like, where do we want to allocate most of our resources to? And they clearly did that in the secondary and the defensive line and with the addition of Riley Reiff. But you're not able to be a deep team when you have to use draft picks to assume that those people are going to be starters, which is why, you know, a player like Jackson Carman not being a starter right now is significant. Obviously, I know people are going to downplay it and say he's a rookie, but I mean, between us and, you know, everyone in the media and as fans, basically first and second round picks are expected to be starters. And I know that Zach Taylor said he's happy with the progression that Jackson Carman has made, but it stands out even more when you're drafting for players to be impact players, because there's just so many holes across the board that there's only so much money you can go around. It's not Monopoly. You know, there's only so much salary cap. And I think that's something to me that sticks out when you talk about depth depth is hard to do when you have a lot of holes. So that's why hitting on those third and fourth round picks year after year, it's why teams like Baltimore and, you know, Pittsburgh that have previously drafted well, they don't find themselves in a situation where they have to go on these big spending sprees because they're grooming these people.
To kind of edit what I said about the Bengals draft history, they have nailed a handful of things. I think they nailed the 2020 draft with Burrow and Higgins and Logan Wilson and some interesting guys beyond that. In 2019, Jonah Williams has the opportunity to have a promising season, and Jermaine Pratt, while plays a position the Bengals have looked to add at since they drafted him, has been good. And in 18, they had Bates and they had Hubbard, two very good value picks for where they got them, two of the best players on the entire defense. And in 2017, they got Joe Mixon. But aside from that, the Bengals have had to basically fill every other void on the roster with some kind of veteran, with some kind of fringe move, or with some kind of overpay in free agency. It takes a few years to judge a draft, and the reason I'm getting so reflective on the Bengals draft is it was such a striking moment when they had to admit that they missed on Price and Jordan, who were two of the Bengals' biggest investments they've made in the offensive line. The core of the Bengals team are the players they've hit on. Your Bateses, your Hubbards, your Boyds, your Mixons, and of course Burrow and Higgins. But aside from that, I'm not buying that the Bengals are noticeably deeper. It's just different versions of the players that they didn't hit on last time. And maybe it pans out this time with a Tyler Shelvin or a Deontay Smith or even a Jermaine Pratt or a Drew Sample. But the Bengals' history in drafting in those spots put them in the position where those guys are going to have to play a lot this season.
Yeah, and I think it's really interesting that you bring up the Billy Price trade, because I feel like that kind of just flew under the radar. You know, there was big expectations for him in Cincinnati, him being, you know, an Ohio State guy here. Him, you know, just not working out here is significant, to say the least. But let's talk about some of the players that we maybe thought would make the roster. I know we both probably could agree that if you heard Joe Burrow talking post-game Sunday, you would have never thought Thad Moss was going to get cut. but he did, which I kind of found interesting, didn't you?
I think that was a fascinating moment in Bengals history. Who knows? this might not matter 5 years from now, because 53rd men on the roster rarely do make any impact over the course of a season. But Joe Burrow, interestingly, you know, while he talked up Ja'Marr Chase, did not use as strong language then in talking about the Bengals' potential draft pick as he did on Sunday talking about Thad Moss. That, to me, reading that, was probably the first time that Joe Burrow ever publicly with the media has shared his thoughts on a potential roster decision. He said he played a small part, maybe even a big part, in the Bengals adding Thad Moss. He talked about what makes him ideal for a quarterback. And again, the Bengals don't play two tight ends on the field very much, let alone three. Whoever the third tight end much wasn't going to make much of an impact at all. But Burrow saw potential for Moss in the scheme. And again, while Mitchell Wilcox might have been the right answer for the Bengals, it'll be interesting to file away in terms of, as we answer the question, the role that Joe Burrow has in player personnel moves.
Well, and another significant player who, I mean, I don't think we all, after the BJ Hill, you know, move, it kind of was like, all right, who's going to go? Because they're not going to trade for a player and keep this same number of defensive tackles. But Mike Daniels, a player that you were talking about, Michael Jordan, but both Mike Daniels and Michael Jordan played significant amount of snaps for the Bengals last year and were both let go by the Bengals, which I found interesting.
You know, the Mike Daniels move, once they traded for BJ Hill, I think that writing was on the wall. Mm-hmm. Mike Daniels, someone who's supposed to push the pocket as a pass rusher, yet someone who got zero sacks and very limited pressures last season. He hadn't flashed enough, you know, honestly, to have that role in the regular season. I was more impressed with Josh Tupou as a pass rusher, and he's a more experienced nose tackle and run stopper than anything. I think heading into the season, Mike Daniels was battling to be a fourth defensive tackle competing with Tyler Shelvin. And then once the Bengals got an upgrade in Hill, someone who has done a much better job than the Bengals defensive tackles on the roster, probably except for Ogunjobi, at moving the pocket, I thought that was a very clear move. And while Mike Daniels did play a lot as he was healthy last season, the Bengals did retool the entire defensive line room. And just like, you know, a guy like Bobby Hart was out on the offensive line after a subpar 2020 season, a guy like Mike Daniels is now out after starting for most of 2020 due to the guys the Bengals added.
Yeah, so there's change across the board. So let's do a little quick takes on the Bengals roster. Outside of the wide receivers, because I'm not going to let you take the easy one out here, what position group are you most excited about in terms of you think that they're going to be really good?
So the answer is safety. That's obvious with Bates and Bell. But the group I'm most interested to see whether or not there's upside in is running back. Joe Mixon's a talented running back. The Bengals invested in him as a talented running back. But we still don't know what the ideal role is for a running back in Zach Taylor's offense. They have been down by so many points so many times over the last two seasons. I don't think they'll be in those positions as often this season. In 2019, you know, the Bengals had to throw the ball a ton until the second half of the year, but they were still trailing for most of those games. And then last season, they kind of embraced the passing approach, especially because Joe Mixon missed most of the season. This year, what's the ideal marriage of the run game and the pass game? You could make the case that Joe Mixon ranks the highest at his position of any player on the Bengals offense. And what does that ideal role look like? And how do you complement that with Chris Evans? I think it's a very interesting question.
Yeah, those are two really good ones. Speaking of safeties, I'm going to do a little tease and plug here, but I was able to speak with Bengals defensive coordinator Lou Anarumo last week for about 10 minutes, and we went pretty in-depth through position by position in the Bengals defense. He gave me his thoughts on each group. And he specifically said, when I asked about the safeties, that it's very clear to him just how much more comfortable Jesse Bates and Von Bell are with each other. And it makes a difference, because he said last year there were probably times where Jesse would wonder if Von was there, and vice versa. Von would wonder, is Jesse going to be there? He said right now they're playing with such confidence and speed that they don't have to have those conversations in their head of, is this person going to be there? And he said he's specifically seen that between those two safeties, and he thinks it's going to make a very big difference in the secondary. And with so much turnover at corner, having those kind of like glue guys at safety in the middle of field, I don't think people understand just how important that can be to a defense.
We were just talking about some of the misses the Bengals front office and coaching staff has made in player personnel. I think two of their biggest hits are this. You know, one, T. Higgins. I think you can't leave him out of this conversation. But signing Von Bell in kind of the third wave of free agency heading into the 2020 season was one of the hardest to make and most important moves for the Bengals defense. You're talking about it. Von Bell's a huge part of the Bengals defense. You know, drafting Joe Burrow is easy. Extending Joe Mixon is what you do. Same with drafting Jamar Chase. That's a move that's right on the table in front of you. But finding a, you know, a high end, a higher end strong safety in Von Bell on a below market value due to the cap situation across the league, I don't think that's a move the Bengals front office gets enough credit for, because Von Bell, as much as anyone except probably Bates and you could argue Awuzie and Hubbard and Hendrickson, you could say Bell is the fifth most scheme determining guy on that entire defense. And to pick them up for as little as they did, that's making a big impact just on who they are overall defensively.
Yeah, I think you're right on the money in saying that that's definitely under the radar signing. Might not be under the radar because he's obviously got a bigger name, but you can't understate just how important having those two veteran safeties back there, especially with the kind of new group. But I would agree with you. I'm very excited to see the secondary as a whole, the corners in specifically, just because I've been so impressed with Chido Awuzie, Anarumo said he has had a really, really good training camp. He used really twice, so that means he's clearly high on his cornerback. But, you know, Trey Wayne's dealing with that hamstring injury is something to monitor. But I feel better about the Bengals' secondary depth than I do their defensive line depth. But, I mean, there's only so much depth across the board. So it'll be interesting to see how all of that shakes out. But across the board, the Bengals' defense on paper has better talent than they did last year. Are you comfortable saying that?
So that's an interesting way to phrase it. And honestly, I'm not sure the answer to that right away. So the big story of March was the Bengals lost William Jackson and lost Carl Lawson and replaced them with Awuzie and Hilton at cornerback and with Trey Hendrickson on the defensive line. And the big question there was, did the Bengals get better in that first initial wave of free agency? They took more steps to getting there by adding Riley Reiff, by adding Larry Ogunjobi, and by adding Ricardo Allen and Eli Apple later in the offseason. Overall, it's definitely a stronger roster with the starting five offensive linemen. There are still a number of questions in reserve. It's definitely a stronger interior offensive line. The outside offensive line, especially with the Cy out, I give the edge to 2020. But overall, I mean, this is just the moral of the story. The Bengals are absolutely betting on the fact that their latest group of draft picks end up being really good. Mm-hmm. They need Higgins. They need Wilson. They need a Cam Sample or a Deontay Smith or a Jackson Carman. They just need some of those players to be really, really good. The overall question I like to frame it is, too, is where are the Bengals at the top of the league? And I think they're there at safety. I think they're there at wide receiver, and they have the potential to get there at running back and at quarterback. But some of those guys I just mentioned, how much they turn into transcendent-type, scheme-changing players this season, I mean, that's the 2021 season for you.
Yeah, so I would say I just mentioned the secondary is the group that I'm most excited to watch. But then on offense, the offensive line, right? So I talked to Brian Callahan also. Both of those pieces, by the way, Bengals fans will be up this weekend on Cincinnati.com if you want to check it out. Some pretty great stuff from both the coordinators, who, by the way, both of the Bengals coordinators, after talking to them for the first time since covering this team, they're brilliant. I can definitely see why Zach Taylor wants them leading the charge behind him. I really enjoyed both those conversations. The Bengals are really, really high on Riley Reiff. Brian Callahan saying that he couldn't even use the words to explain just how much of a difference Riley Reiff has made. Obviously, there's huge questions at guard, and we'll just have to wait and see how those veterans play out. But I think Riley Reiff there is really helping this group, so I'm really intrigued to watch that position group and specifically because you know what you're going to get from the wide receivers and the running backs in this offense. Well, but you're right in saying we don't know what the running back's role is in Zach Taylor's offense. But I think the offensive line for me is the one that I'm definitely most excited to watch. So it's a little bit of an interesting time for the Bengals because this year, games with the 17 games, the week one starts later. So typically in years past, it would go the fourth preseason game and then week one prep would start the next week. Coaches and players now have off until they start, you know, kind of going in through their game week preparations next week. So it's an interesting time for these guys to, you know, get healthy, take some time off before they start making that week one push. Obviously, the Bengals are going to practice today and tomorrow. So we'll see what those practices kind of look like. But it's definitely an interesting time in the NFL.
There's one thing we haven't spoken about in a few weeks that nobody's talking about right now, but this is one of the most important windows of the Bengals season because between now and the start of the season, either Jesse Bates is going to get a contract extension or Jesse Bates isn't. This came up.
Do you think we're going to talk about Jesse Bates and his contract extension every podcast?
Well, now, between now and the start of the season, this is now the only thing that matters heading into the unofficial deadline that's often been set with the Bengals heading into the year. I believe when we're recording this, it's exactly a year to the date since Joe Mixon signed his contract extension with the Bengals. Unlike Mixon, Bates has been practicing every day and playing in games. But whether or not the Bengals are able to keep their best and their hardest draft pick, because again, Burrow is right there on the table, over the last several years, I mean, that's the whole story and that's the whole moral of these 2 weeks. And, you know, I hope we get the chance to talk to Bates because whether or not the Bengals lock up their best player on the defense, their best draft pick, again, aside from Burrow, over this stretch, I mean, it doesn't get more important than that.
Right. And since you brought that up, before we head out, let's just talk about that a little bit because Harrison Smith, the Vikings' excellent safety, signed a new deal over the weekend. And a lot of people think that that is a benchmark for Jesse Bates. He signed a 4-year deal worth up to $64 million. Different than Jamal Adams, but I think Jesse Bates more so resembles a Harrison Smith than Jamal Adams because Jamal Adams, you could make a case he should be paid as a linebacker and a safety. You know, what he does is different than what Jesse Bates does. So I don't really think that that's the right measurement stick for him. I think Harrison Smith is right along the lines of a Jesse Bates. What do you think about Smith's deal?
So I haven't given my Jesse Bates rant yet. So can I go on my Jesse Bates rant real quick?
Go off, Charlie.
So it's fitting with what we started the podcast with, talking about the Bengals' history in the draft. And again, I forgot Hubbard as part of that 2018 class, but the 2018 class of Bates and Hubbard was really what the Bengals have gotten right in the last 5 years. Meanwhile, because so many other draft picks haven't panned out, as I said, the Bengals have had to fill an entire roster, basically, except for 13 guys, with recent free agent acquisitions. The goal was, the idea was, that instead of spending your money on Trey Waynes and DJ Reader and Larry Ogunjobi and Riley Reiff and on and on and on, you're able to reward the guys you get in-house through the system. That's how the last Bengals playoff teams were built. So now getting back, Jesse Bates and Sam Hubbard, who they extended, were the guys from that 2018 class and before who panned out. What happens then if you don't extend the one huge hit that you've made during that window? The Bengals, again, lost Billy Price. They lost their first-round picks in 2017, 16, 15, 14. Bates is basically the first-round pick, the one they hit on during that stretch. And if you're overpaying on guys like Trey Waynes and DJ Reader across the board,
that's a really good point.
You have to have it because Bates is what you got right, and you can't risk that.
You made some great points. I'm glad that you went on your Jesse Bates rant. I'm really glad you did that. So it's definitely interesting to to see how this is all going to work out. We'll obviously be staying tuned on Jesse Bates' contract watch. But a lot of good stuff to talk about today. Really enjoyed kind of going through this roster with you. We are now going to switch to the segment in which I think Bengals fans are going to really enjoy every week from Jason Hoffman, as he's going to give you guys a little preview on maybe some over and unders when you're talking about this Bengals season as a whole. So, Charlie, thanks so much for your great insight and that Jesse Bates rant. I'm looking forward to continuing this with you, and we'll be back next week for the real thing when we're starting you off with a preview against the Vikings twice a week, right?
Yeah, season, football,
can't
sports.
Wait.
Yeah.
Jason, I need to know, I've been sitting on my pins and needles waiting for this advice that you're about to give me about how I can take $5 and turn it into $600. So let me hear it.
All right, Kelsey. Well, I'm glad to be back here. Once again, reminding everybody that anything I talk about here is not actually professional gambling advice. This is all for fun. If you or anyone you know has a gambling problem, please call 1-800-GAMBLER. All right, so $5 into $600. The way you do that is you find something that has plus 12,000 odds.
Okay.
Now, since we last talked, I have to report back and apologize to all the listeners and you. Someone went in and put enough money on the Bengals to take their odds from 12,000 plus 12,000 to plus 10,000.
Do you think it was a Bengals Beat podcast listener?
Probably. I'm going to take a wild stab. So the bet that I teased is if you are the most confident or delusional, however you want to put it, fan in the world and think the Bengals are winning the Super Bowl this year, i.e. Joe Burrow's going to pull a Patrick Mahomes and win a Super Bowl in his sophomore season, then you can take $5 and turn it into $500 at plus 10,000 odds on the Bengals to win the Super Bowl this year. But again, your actual payout would be $505 because you get that initial bet back. But yeah, you could win $500 if the Bengals win the Super Bowl and you're so inclined to go bet that. And all these odds that I'm giving you come from Tipico Sportsbook, which is the official sportsbook partner of the USA Today Network.
Hmm. That's very interesting. I'm very curious. If you're the person that made that decision, tweet us. Let us know. We'd love to hear what made you decide to go all in on the Cincinnati Bengals.
And make sure to black out the bet ID, but please send it to us. Tag us on Twitter. It'd be cool to see.
Yeah, definitely. So let's talk about the Bengals season. As Charlie and I just talked about, players and coaches now have, you know, the next 10 days to get ready for the season one opener. So I know you have some over and unders in terms of the whole Bengals season. Obviously, Jason's going to be joining us with his segment every week to fill you in more on a week-to-week basis in terms of the whole NFL schedule that week. But let's talk about the Bengals season as a whole right now.
Absolutely. When the schedule came out and I saw who they drafted, I saw what the projections were going to be for their depth chart, I thought to myself, last year, this was a team that if Joe Burrow's healthy, wins 6 or 7 games. Some people might say 5 to 7, whatever. But I thought that was a team last year that won 6 to 7 games. Looking at the roster, knowing the experience that Burrow is going to bring this year, the experience that he has with Zach Taylor, and also the experience that Lou Anarumo, whose defense was trending toward the better toward the end of the season last year. Remember that blowout of Pittsburgh on Monday night. I thought this is a team that's going to improve at minimum 2 wins. So I said, I'm going to guess it'll be a losing season. I'm going to guess the Bengals go 8-9 this year. Over-under comes out from the sports book, the powers that be. Win total was anywhere from 5.5 to 6.5. It's now pretty much 6.5 across the board. So for me, my season outlook initially was 8. I feel really good getting an extra 1.5-game window in there in case there's a tie or another severe injury or something like that. I like the extra 1.5 I get. I would take the over of 6.5. Which is plus 100. So $100 wins you $100. Your total payout's 200. And, that's how I would roll this year. I thought 8 was the number at the beginning of the season. You're going to give me an extra 1.5-game buffer in there. I like it.
I think I'm going to go with you too. I think I'm going to take the over on that for sure. I think I might go 9 games, but I am right around kind of what you're thinking.
You know how this league works. injuries happen all the time. People, teams come out of nowhere. What is it? Every year, at least two teams who missed the playoffs the year before make the playoffs, and at least two that were in are also out. So, you know, it's anything can happen any week. That's why everyone loves the NFL.
Yeah, it's the best reality TV show there is. Do you have any other projections that you want to tell us about?
I'll run down them real quick. Things that I like that I saw that are futures just for this year. If you're a Bengals fan and you want to have something to keep you interested all year, even if things might not be going your way on Sundays or Thursdays or Mondays, the Bengals to win the division, the AFC North, currently at Tipico is a plus 2,200. So $100 will get you 2,200. Total payout would be 2,300 because you get your 100 back. I don't like that. I think the Browns and the Ravens are clearly the division favorites. You'd need to see. Now, granted, the Ravens already had suffered a severe injury to their projected starting running back. Terrible to see that happen to anybody in preseason. But the Browns look every bit the part. I mean, I think the gap is just too long between those two teams and the Bengals. I do like that the Bengals would finish ahead of the Steelers, but that's not something you can bet. You can only bet who wins the division.
Right.
So if you think injury bug's going to happen or the Bengals are going to super overperform, $100 could get you $2,200 if they win the division. My favorite bet, Joe Burrow to win comeback player of the year. This means that the Bengals contend for a playoff spot, which that 8-9 win season would theoretically get them in that wild card conversation.
Dak Prescott would be 9 for that.
Yeah. Dak Prescott does not just come back and light the league up, which I don't think he's going to do. I love Prescott coming out of college. Said he was going to be the best quarterback of that class. But he hasn't impressed me the last two seasons. Puts up gaudy numbers. They're in a lot of shootouts because they play in a terrible division.
Yeah.
And they have a bad defense. So Joe Burrow plus 600. $100 bet gets you 600 back. I like that a lot.
Okay.
He's got the second best odds to win that.
Who has the best
odds? Dak Prescott.
Okay.
And then Burrow's tied with Christian McCaffrey for the second best odds. Mm-hmm. So McCaffrey would be good money on that too, because that guy does everything. Another Burrow future you can bet. Lead the league in passing touchdowns, which would be plus 2,000. So a $100 bet would win you 2,000. Or lead the league in passing yards. $100 would get you 1,400. I like the passing yards just because last year he was on pace to lead the league in passing attempts.
Right.
So you convert. He missed a ton of deep balls. I don't know of any balls past 30 yards that he actually completed. Can't recall them at least. So if you think he fixes that this year, maybe not a bad bet to make. Again, not actual betting advice. Just saying if you're a Bengals fan and you think, man, Burrow's just going to light everything up, these are bets that you could make.
Okay.
And then two others real quick. Joe Mixon to lead the league in rushing yards, plus 2,000. I love this one.
Wow.
2018, Joe Mixon missed two games due to injury, still led the AFC in rushing yards. So I like this one a lot just because Zach Taylor, they've talked a lot about the need for balance and how they haven't been balanced with Joe Burrow last year. They haven't been balanced in the Zach Taylor era at all. And if that spread run offense with Frank Pollock has Joe Mixon as excited as possible.
If Joe Mixon leads the NFL, you said NFL or AFC?
NFL.
If he leads the league in rushing, the Bengals offensive line is not a question anymore.
Or the passing game is so good that nobody can put anywhere near eight people in the box.
Yeah, but that's hard to do when you haven't seen the quarterback make a completion for more than 30 yards, you know?
Again, I'm offering this to Bengals fans who are excited about what's coming. These are the things you can put your money on. And out of all of these, beyond comeback player of the year for Burrow, I think Joe Mixon leading the league in yards is the next most likely. Most likely. Didn't say it would happen. Most likely. Lastly, I'll just give you all an idea of what's a sucker bet. So Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins are both have the exact same odds at the sports book, regardless of whether it's leading the league in receiving touchdowns or leading the league in receiving yards. That, folks, listeners at home, fans of the podcast, is a sucker bet. The sports book is telling you, neither of these guys, in our eyes, is more likely to do it than the other, which means if you have two quarterbacks, you have no quarterbacks, right?
Right.
That's what they're doing. So this is sucker bet. Stay away from it. Wouldn't go anywhere near it. If you're totally bonkers and you think that Tyler Boyd is going to lead the league in receiving yards or touchdowns, you can get ridiculous odds, but I didn't even look those up. Last but not least, craziest bet you can make on the Bengals.
Hit us with it.
Win the most games out of the entire NFL this year. $5 will turn into $1,000.
Woo.
20,000 to 1 odds. Or plus 20,000 odds. 2,000 to 1.
Wow.
Plus 20,000 odds.
Man. That's certainly interesting.
that's incredible, right? You got yeah. you got a 16 win team down there at One Paul Brown Stadium this year, huh? I don't know about that.
Yeah.
So those are all the Bengals related NFL futures you can bet right now if you want before the season starts on September 12th.
So, that's all great stuff, Bengals fans. That's some great intel if you're into all of that prediction type of stuff. So, Jason, why don't you tell us before we head out of here a little bit more about on a week-to-week basis what the Bengals Beat podcast listeners can expect from you and your segment?
So I've been doing this now off and on, if you count the years that I've been here in the States for the NFL seasons, about 13 seasons I've been legally betting on football when I lived out west and then when it came back and it was legalized in Indiana. So I'm not someone who's going to enter and win the NFL Super Contest out in Vegas any year, but I usually do good enough that I pad a little bit of extra money in the pocket at the end of the season. So every week, starting next week and including the Bengals bye week because the NFL still goes on even though the Bengals don't play, I'm going to come in here and give you 3 to 5 games that I like, why I like them, and which bet I'm going to personally take. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to give you one stupid 10-team parlay to play. If that hits, you can turn $10 into $2,000 on a weekly basis. But the reason 10-team parlays exist is because they don't hit. You're going to get that every week from me. You can follow me on Twitter at jhoff in Cincy, C-I-N-C-Y. And you can see some of my plays there. I do post tickets. I black out the ID and all that stuff and the location, exactly how much I wagered. But I will show you what I actually bet on that week. That's what people can expect starting next week. And yes, I do guarantee that I will tell you what I would bet on the Bengals game each week. But I do not bet on the Bengals each week because we cover them professionally. And then you're also going to get beyond just the game. What I like on spreads, I'll also be able to do I'll give you some over-unders that I like, and I'll tell you what my bad beat of the week and my sucker bet of the week are.
That's awesome. I know I'm going to pat ourselves on the back here, but, what more could you ask for? A preview from two people that cover the Bengals every single day. You'll get to hear from opposing head coaches, respective media members from the team that the Bengals are going to be facing, and the best advice you can get from Jhoff in terms of how you could make some money. What more could you ask for in a podcast, right?
Absolutely. We are trying to give our audience anything they could possibly want. Make it worth their listening time. Reward them for tuning in each week. Yeah.
And as he said, we hope that we were worth your time tuning in today. And we look forward to starting off week 1 with our 2 episodes next week. Jason, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Kelsey.